Hello, this is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Yay!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. These are busy times for the Scott administration as officials work to prepare a proposed budget for next year. What kind of growth is the administration considering, and will the plan be funded by using existing revenue growth and not any new taxes or fees? And will the administration have any big proposals to address Vermont's demographic challenge, a challenge that will see the number of Vermonters over 65 grow by 50% in just the next decade at a time when the overall general population of the state declines? These are just a few of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor Phil Scott. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
And a lot of topics we want to discuss with you today. But first, some parts of the state, as we just heard in our newscast, have been hit hard by massive rain and enormous winds. This has led to power outages in some places. Roads are being flooded. Schools have been closed. I'm wondering if you can give us an update on what's happening.
Yeah, you know, I think we received a little bit more wind and rain than we anticipated. A lot of parts widespread throughout Vermont. We're still expecting wind gusts of 55 miles an hour or more. And I think the rivers are going to crest early this afternoon. But we have that flooding throughout Johnson and northern Vermont in particular, but also in southwest Vermont. So we have about 40,000 without power, mostly in the southern part of the state, and we have about 22 state road closures. And we're going to have a press conference on this with Green Mountain Power at 1:30 at Emergency Management this afternoon because we're very concerned about the number of down power lines out there. And that's where we have to be very vigilant, very careful. Make sure that when you're driving through an area and you see a down power line, stay away from it. Just assume that it's live. Don't assume that it's dead. Assume that it's live and stay away from it. Report it as soon as you can. And also, if you're driving and you see a flooded or closed road, if there's any water there, you don't know what's underneath it. So stay vigilant to make sure, don't drive through it, because you really don't know how much undermining it's done, how much erosion there is, and that could, lead to a lot of issues. So we just want you to be careful, be aware, and help your neighbors out. I mean, it's one of those things where you're seeing, coming in just a half hour ago, there was a tree down across Memorial Drive. Traffic was backed up to the interstate. I went in early this morning, to work, and then there was a down tree up near Berlin Pond near where I live, and then I had to go back and get my dog to bring him to the vet. He's not doing real well, but I had to go back and get him. And there was a down tree in between that time, so I had to cut it down, you know, move it myself with a chainsaw.
Really? So you were out clearing today?
Yeah, I did that because I needed to get back to get my pup and bring him to the vet. So it was the only that was the only thing I could do. The road crews are out, very very busy, and they certainly had other things to do. So, you know, I think we're all doing our part. Vermonters do that. If you see a neighbor in need, give a helping hand. It really does. It does say a lot about who we are.
And as you mentioned, it's not only rain out there, it's the wind. This morning, the wind at Mount Washington in New Hampshire was measured at 130 miles an hour. Now, here we're talking about, I think, 50, 60?
Yeah, 55 miles an hour or so. I think earlier they were thinking that it might get up to 70 miles an hour. But take this into account when we're seeing or watching what's happening in California. And the high winds and the fires that are there, they're experiencing the same winds that we are, and they have been for quite some time. This will hopefully be over today for us, but this is something they've been dealing with for weeks. So keep that in mind as we watch what's happening there and how quickly the fire can spread with these amount of winds that we're feeling ourselves.
And are you expecting that things are going to get worse this afternoon?
I would say that the flood waters, you know, the rivers are going to crest, which means they're going to rise a little bit more. But the rain appears to be over for the most part, and that's good news. So we should get through this. And again, I think the problem is with the trees that I'm seeing that are down. You're seeing the roots and everything coming up. It's not just broken trees. It's the whole root system that's coming up because we had so much rain. I mean, in the Burlington area, we had 4 inches of rain in a short period of time. And so we've seen, you know, high amounts of rain. So that softens up the base of the tree. And then that's what we're seeing. So some of these trees aren't just from decay. It's from the root system.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Phil Scott. We're talking about the weather conditions outside in Vermont. A lot of rain, a lot of wind, road closures, trees going down, power lines down, and the caution for everyone to take it as safe as possible. You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. We're going to be talking about the budget and also some other issues, perhaps climate change. So let's look at the budget. I know your administration is very busy at this time of year putting a budget together for next year. Is there a target growth rate that you say that don't want to go any higher than that?
Yeah, we have a calculation that we use, and we've adhered to that over the last couple of years that we put our budgets together, and we intend to do that again this year. The good news is we're seeing some growth in revenue as we have over the last couple of years, which we didn't have over the last decade, but we're seeing that now. So that's the good news. But we have the problem is we have higher spending pressures, whether it's in human services or technology or our pensions are underfunded and underfunded liabilities. That we need, we have an obligation to make sure that we, to fill, as well as, increase in pay and so forth, for our state workforce. So, we're seeing a lot of pressures, maybe even creating a $70 to $80 million gap, between what we're taking in and if remain the same, that we would feel. So, through this summer, I engaged the cabinet, making sure that we're looking for both short-term and long-term solutions because this isn't going away. We have to find ways to close this gap, I think, through efficiency, entrepreneurial ideas, and doing all this, you know, thinking outside the box about, really challenging our secretaries and commissioners to think outside the box in ways that we can accomplish this. Live within our means without adversely impacting services that are desperately needed as well. So we've been able to do that over the last couple of years. We've faced similar challenges as well, but we've been able to work with the legislature in order to achieve a balanced budget while, again, staying within this growth rate calculation. And the money that we're taking in, just like Vermonters do in their own budgets, and the businesses do in their own budgets, they have to live within their means.
So I'm trying to understand. On one hand, the state is taking in more revenue than anticipated, right? And while that is taking place, you're still looking at a $70 to $80 million budget gap?
That's right. I mean, with all the underfunded liabilities, which if you, we're not talking about millions of dollars. We're talking about, you know, billions of dollars in pension, underfunded pensions. So we have to we've been on a path, to try and at least make payments on that, so that, because again, we have an obligation to do that. Promise made is something that we have to follow through on, and so we're going to be faced regardless, even with more money coming in, even with revenues coming in maybe above expectations. But we're still early in the year. I'm not ready to say that, but we're on track. We're doing well, but we could see a we could see a $70 to $80 million gap between the revenues coming in and, you know, the budget that we had this year, which is the fiscal year 20, and what we'll need for 21. So that budget gap will be about 70, we anticipate, could be $70 to $80 million. So, again, I don't intend to raise taxes and fees in order to accomplish that. I believe that we have to do it through structural changes, thinking outside the box, efficiencies, and just coming to grips with again, living within our means, because affordability is a huge issue for this state, and we have to maintain that focus on that issue alone. And some of that is, you know, due to our demographics. I mean, I talk about that all the time. But it's real. You know, we have more deaths than births in this state, stagnant population. We have fewer people working, about 14 or 15,000 fewer people working today than in 2009. 30,000 fewer kids in our schools over the last 20 years. I mean, this is having a ripple effect across the state. So if we can fill those jobs, I believe, and bring more families into the state, then it'll spread the burden out, and we'll bring in more revenue organically.
Let me ask you this, because you, as you just mentioned, the demographic challenge facing the state of Vermont. I think in the next 10 to 11 years, the general population of the state is supposed to go down maybe a percent or two. The number of Vermonters over 65 is going to go up by a staggering 50%. I know your administration has taken some steps to start to deal with this problem, but do you ever think that it is such a large problem that it can't be done with a program here and a program there? It needs some kind of big solution.
Yeah. Well, if the big solution's out there, we're all ears. But what we're seeing is there's a lot of smaller ideas that will make a difference. And the good news is I believe the legislature is a willing partner in this now. They're coming to grips with this. They see it as well. They're hearing from their constituents. So we're working together, trying to solve this. And we've invested in a lot of innovative programs and to try and attract more working families to Vermont. And we've received some criticism over some of them, but they're having an effect, you know. And I get it from the average Vermonter that hears about a remote worker program, for instance, and they think we're giving them just writing checks for $10,000 to bring more people, lure more people into the state. But the reality is, if we can attract more people, and again, if we can bring more people into the state, then we will spread the burden out. Because what we're hearing from the average Vermonter is, hey, I've been suffering under this high tax state for a long time, for decades. How about sending me a check for $10,000? And in effect, if we can bring more people in, they will be getting a bonus in some respects, because the only way we're going to solve this is more people. We don't need more taxes. We need more taxpayers, and that's the game right now from my standpoint, is how do we attract more people into the state and to fill the jobs that we know are available. There's not a day that goes by that I don't run into an employer who is looking for employees. I'm sure that you hear from them all the time. There's signs in every window looking for people. So that's the challenge, and I believe with apprenticeships and trades training, paying more attention to our tech centers, as well as retraining those who are in fields that may want to do something different. We have to be there to help them as well. And as well, you know, we should focus on the military. We have military members who are retiring, but they're still in their 40s. So we want to make sure we make it easy for them to transition to the civilian workforce and look for ways to adopt their trades with licensing and so forth, so they don't have to go through that again. So there's a lot of ways to do this, and I'm not sure that there's one single answer. And we're competing with other states as well. So we have to do everything we can to make sure that we make it as affordable and as attractive as possible, leveraging every asset that we have.
So there's some lawmakers who think if Vermont had a paid family leave program, that that would help attract a lot of younger families to the state of Vermont. Now, you were hoping to have a plan with New Hampshire as a voluntary program with Governor Sununu, but it sounds like he's going his own way now and that the idea of having a Vermont-New Hampshire partnership is not going to happen. Given that reality, are you taking another look at mandatory paid family leave?
Well, there's a lot that you just said that we can debate a little bit. I wouldn't say New Hampshire is going it alone. They've made some adjustments to the initial plan, but they have a different legislative schedule than we have, and their rules are a little bit different. They had to submit some language to introduce into a bill form. So they're still very – we've spoken to New Hampshire, and they've relayed their preference to a bi-state plan. We can still do this together, but we can also do it separately. We don't have to do it together, but it would be more efficient, more economical, and I believe that it would engage and it would, have some sort of a, like a pilot in terms of working together with other states, which we don't do a lot, and we should. We have a state right next door that may have a double the population. Their economy might be a little bit better than ours, but we're similar in our geographical location. And I think that we could find other ways to work together as well. So we can pursue this on our own. I look for ways where we agree, and I would agree. A paid family leave program would be helpful to Vermonters. I just think it should be voluntary. And I don't believe that we should have a payroll tax that would cost Vermonters $25 to $80 million a year in order to do it. Now, I just, as I said before, we're looking at a gap of maybe $70 to $80 million this year. Introducing a tax without even solving that problem, just to introduce a new program, I'm not sure is the right answer. And the way I see it is if we can work together on this, we can introduce this voluntary paid family leave program that would be beneficial to Vermonters, give them flexibility, give employers something to work with. They could jump on the program as well. And this would set up the structure without having another state bureaucracy handling it and doing it. And we could prove that out. And then if you decided at some point in time that you wanted to introduce some sort of mandatory system, you could still use the same structure. But let's walk before we run. Let's prove this out. Let's see how it works. I mean, what's the harm in doing this as a voluntary program and see if people engage? And if it doesn't, you can always move to a mandatory system.
Some of the critics of the voluntary plan would say that if you do it on a voluntary basis, you'll never have the numbers of people that you need that the cost of the program will be too great.
Well, we proved that out already. We can make this work with 10,000 people. So it's economical with 10,000 people. So it can only grow from there. If we can introduce this and bring in our state employees, start this off. And then have employers. I've spoken to employers who would love to take advantage of a program like this. They don't want a mandatory program, but they think that this could work. And so what's the harm in trying this? I just don't see what it would do, what harm it would do to set up this structure. It just makes all kinds of sense to me.
Let's start off with Asa, who's calling from Middlebury. Hi, Asa. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So, Governor Scott, I'm a young Vermonter. I'm from Montpelier, and I'm in school at Middlebury College. And like many of my peers, I've been noticing the effects of climate change. And you said that you don't favor taking drastic steps and that you'd like to do almost nothing. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. So how can you sleep with yourself at night, knowing that we're in a cycle of extreme weather and other extreme effects of climate change that are going to hurt me and my peers in the future of the state?
Well, I think thanks for the call, and I'm sure you've been working with some group to introduce the question. But I first of all, I would say I may have used a poor choice of words when I said that I wasn't looking to reinvent the wheel. The reason being is we're doing a lot here in this state. I believe that we've done more over the last couple of years than has been done previously. I believe climate change is real. I believe that we can attain 90% renewables by 2050. The legislature and the administration had moved forward on that a number of years ago. That's a pretty tall order in itself. And I'm just saying, let's continue to work on that just the way we have been. You know, 60% of our carbon emissions are transportation related. We introduced an electric vehicle reimbursement campaign last year and an incentive to do that. We're building out the infrastructure needed to charge vehicles that I think is going to be necessary for the future. And I believe that's the area that we're working on. We've done some things with the legislature. We're willing to do more. But we have to prioritize everything, whether it's human services or lake cleanup or climate change initiatives. But I believe we can get the most. The biggest bang for our buck is going to be electric vehicles. And we're moving forward with that and trying to change the trajectory. Now, this isn't going to be a linear line between here and maybe 20 years from now. In terms of the electric vehicle changes that we're seeing across the country, there's going to have to be some acceptance, new technology, battery storage is becoming more popular. I've actually visited a couple of businesses here in the state that are really engaged and at the cutting edge of battery storage, large scale battery storage, which is going to make renewables all that much more effective. So. To say that we're doing nothing, I think, is inaccurate. We're doing a lot, and we're continuing to do all we can, because I think it's important to our future, our kids, but as well as ourselves. We're seeing the effects of climate change. We're talking about it today here, 4 inches of rain, high winds. Not that we haven't seen that before, but we're seeing more of it. And we're seeing it in California with the wildfires there. So we have to pay attention to this, and we're doing that.
So are you discouraged? I think there have been some recent reports that indicate that Vermont's greenhouse gas emissions have gone up, not down, in the last few years. So the problem's getting worse and not getting better.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing more cars, which is so counterintuitive when you think about I know, Bob, you've lived here a long time yourself. I'm sure you can attest to the fact that we're seeing more cars on the road, right? It just seems that way. But our population is stagnant. We're getting older. But more people are driving, apparently, because there's more vehicles on the road. So what we're seeing now is, again, our carbon emissions are becoming more prevalent because I believe we're driving more. And so what we need to do is transition as quickly as possible to a non-carbon emitting vehicle, which in this case I think is electric. I know there's other concepts. Hydrogen is an area that some manufacturers are looking at, but I think it's going to be electric. And when you see companies like Harley-Davidson come out with a line of motorcycles that are electric, you know things are changing, and they're doing that. I don't know if you're aware of that, but it's pretty pretty exciting in many many different ways. And when you see Ford coming out with pickups, F-150s that are going to be electric. That means things are changing. So again, once there's more acceptance, I think we'll see the trajectory increase. We'll see the inclination of this line to where we need to be grow faster as technology changes and more acceptance happens and more charging stations appear.
So as you look at the issue of climate change, do you have a sense of urgency that this has to be dealt with in the next few years?
I think Vermont has done that. I mean, adopting one of the first states to adopt 90% renewable by 2050. I think that's a tall order. And it's something that I believe can be accomplished, but we're going to have to work together in order to do it. And there has to be, more acceptance in new technology, different technology. And I would say, again, electric vehicles is where it's all going to happen, because 60% of our carbon emissions are through electric vehicles.
So right now, if I remember correctly, Vermont has 5,000 or 6,000 electric vehicles. The goal is to get to 50,000 in 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that going to happen? Well, is there going to have to be some government subsidies here?
Well, that's what we're doing. I mean, we provided for some subsidies in this last budgetary cycle. And the program hasn't been rolled out yet, and it will be in the next couple of weeks or a few weeks. But that's what it's going to take, I think. I think we're going to have to incentivize, and again, I think the manufacturers themselves, once they start building more of them, once batteries, become better, they're doing, I was at a manufacturer, here in Vermont, and, they're not just talking about lithium batteries, they're talking about solid state batteries, and that's the next generation, apparently. So, longer storage, and when you look at where we've been in terms of long-term large-scale storage, electric storage, battery storage, where we were maybe 20 years ago, and you can see the size of the facility it would take to put a battery storage for a small neighborhood, as to what it is today. The size is half of what it was then. So that means they're getting more efficient, more condensed, and lasting longer. And that's what we're going to need. Technology has to keep pace with what our demands are.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Henry, who's calling from Marshfield. Hey, Henry, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much. It's good to talk to you guys. Phil, first, thanks for the tires. You were talking a little while ago about thinking outside of the box and trying to be innovative. I've been working on climate change and working against the climate catastrophe for about 15 years. I'm just a carpenter in the state of Vermont, but there's no science that really supports the idea that technology and selling a bunch of electric cars is going to save the food system from desertification. Most Vermonters are dependent on import food that comes from California, Mexico, Chile. And we are so far away from any kind of technological fix. You said a few months ago, and I'm sure you regret it, that California wildfires were probably a big opportunity for Vermonters. But Vermont needs California and a bunch of other places to survive, or we're going to have a famine. And you not taking any of this seriously is not doing us any good. No matter what your connections are through the American Legislative Exchange Commission, the Koch brothers and stuff like that. But we do know that you are able to think on your feet, and we'd really like you to demonstrate that in the case of climate change and try and help us figure out what we're going to do with a major economy killer. This isn't just it's going to get warmer, we're going to lose the maple industry. We're going to lose our food system, and we're going to have to figure a bunch of stuff out quick. So could you speak
okay.
a little bit more directly?
Okay, Henry, we appreciate your phone call. As you look at some of the solutions outside of transportation, Henry brought up we're getting food from, you know, not only all across the country, but all across the world probably.
Well, again, agriculture is, the backbone of Vermont. I think there are a number of areas where we can feed ourselves, and that's why we have to pay attention. You know, some have suggested that we don't need agriculture in Vermont. We don't need dairy in Vermont. We can rely on others, and I would beg to differ. I believe that we need our family farms. We need to make sure that we're producing and taking care of ourselves. I mean, that's part of our independence here in Vermont. And I believe that, we need to make sure that we're buying in that way too, buying local, making sure that we're supporting, the family farms that exist today. They're struggling. They're challenged. Our family farms, farming in general is struggling. It's particularly dairy farming. Low milk prices, have caused some of that. But if we could, do what we can, to support them and try new products. I was really impressed, with some of what, UVM is doing, with some of the farms, up in the, up in the northwest section of the state in terms of trying different products, different types of both edible agricultural products, as well as those that will help us keep ourselves warm. And it was milkweed was one area where they're looking at that. Apparently, that was something that was popular back in World War II. And then plastics took over. But milkweed apparently has a higher insulating factor than down, which was amazing to me. So they're growing some milkweed there, which we all thought was just another weed. But apparently it has some benefit that is untapped. So, you know, we need enterprising people. We need people to be creative. And I do believe we should be feeding ourselves.
Let me ask you, you were talking earlier in the program that general fund revenues were doing pretty well. What we've seen in the transportation fund, particularly with the gas tax and the diesel tax, is more and more people are driving fuel-efficient cars and even electric vehicles, is we see because we have a gas tax that's a per-gallon tax, right?
Right.
We're seeing a decrease in the amount of money coming into the transportation fund and the money that's available to maintain roads and bridges across the state. Does something have to be done to address this issue in terms of the electric vehicles and the hybrid vehicles?
Yeah, that's, you know, the transportation fund is problematic in many respects, just for the areas that you spoke about. Our vehicles are becoming more efficient and more economical in terms of gas consumption, which is a good thing, and we need to continue to pursue that and make sure that we're pressuring the manufacturers to do that as well. I think, but as we transition to different types of fuels, electric vehicles in particular, we have to look at different ways to adopt a user fee of some sort. But I think it has to be done nationally. I don't think that we can do it individually. Any state can do it individually. But if this is happening, we have to, again, we're seeing it nationally. There's many challenges with the transportation funds and the highway trust fund on a federal standpoint, federal basis. And we have to do something about that. So there's going to have to be some sort of user fee introduced. And what it looks like, I'm not sure. But that's something that the Congress should be addressing now, along with some of the other issues that are facing, challenging us, immigration and so forth, that we should be working on today.
Am I wrong? For some reason, I have a recollection that sometime in the last year or so, you suggested looking at perhaps a higher registration fee for electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles. Did you have a plan that Vermont would do this on its own?
I'm not sure that we didn't do that,
okay.
But it was something that I believe was talked about in the legislature. And again, I think some have talked about that. And maybe that's part of what we do. I don't know what the answer is. But again, I think this is something that that needs to be debated, addressed, because as we, and it's one of those issues that we can't just flip a switch and go to all electric vehicles tomorrow, because we count on the revenues from some of the from gas and fuel oils in order to maintain our roads and improve our roads, which we'll need whether they're electric or traditional gas vehicles in the past.
You know, you've had your disagreements with the Trump administration and certainly a certain wing of the Republican Party in the state of Vermont who feel that you're not conservative enough. I'm wondering, back in the spring of 2001, Senator Jeffords became an independent, and he said he didn't leave the party left him. Does it ever occur to you that that's something that you should do?
Not from my standpoint. I believe that there's room in the Republican Party for people like myself and Governor Baker and Governor Hogan and others, because we represent states that have different perspectives, and I have a different perspective myself. I'm independent by nature. But at the same time, I believe the two-party system that we have works, and I know that there's others that would say we need more party participation. But I think from my standpoint, the Republican Party just I believe should be more open-minded and from from the governor's perspective and I talk with a lot of other Republican governors. Nobody ever condemns me for any of the actions that I'm taking and anything that I say in terms of the president. I call them the way that I see them. I feel as though I'm like an umpire that calls balls and strikes, and if I if I continue to do that, I think you will see more trust in government, and I think that that's what we all want. We want more. We want to be able to trust our government, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of trust out there on either side.
You know, right now you already have a Democratic challenger for 2020. You have a Republican challenger for governor for 2020. I know you've said that you're going to wait, I think, until the spring to decide whether or not you're going to seek a third term in office. But I'm wondering, if you wait until the spring and you decide not to run, haven't you left the Republican Party in a precarious situation?
Well, I'm not sure. There's already a candidate that stepped forward from running as a Republican, so I'm not sure that argument holds up.
Well, if you wait until the spring, then the party would say, you know, you're only giving us a couple of months to find another candidate that we can run.
Well, I'm not sure that there may be more candidates running between now and then. I just think that I think Vermonters are a little weary of campaigns and what we're seeing on a national level, I think is problematic on many different levels, and I think they're a little weary of the constant campaign cycle. So we have challenges here in the Vermont. We've talked about a number of them already on this program, and I think focusing on them first, making sure that I follow through on some of the I guess some of the things that we've done already in terms of trying to make Vermont more affordable and grow the economy, protect the most vulnerable. I believe in those principles, and I think that I should be focusing on that first. And I think most Vermonters would appreciate that, that we're not getting sidetracked by politics as usual. So there's plenty of time between now and November. And I think again, I'm just going to focus on the job at hand and try and perform it to the best of my ability.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Chris in South Burlington. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Governor Scott. Could you just talk about the affordable housing strategy that the state has, and do you feel like entities like VHFA are meeting their mission? It seems like affordable housing increasingly becomes a larger and larger issue for many residents. Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree that housing is an issue that we talk about a lot. A lot of our employers talk about the need for more affordable housing for our workforce in particular. 2 years ago, when I came into office, I'd been hearing about some of the demands and some of the needs that we had for affordable housing amongst most people. But we'd always let things get in the way of accomplishing that. So we're biting it off one piece at a time. So I decided that we were going to put a bill forward, worked with the legislature on this. It was a $37 million housing bond. Leveraging about another $65 million to make the single largest investment in housing Vermont has ever seen. Is it enough? Maybe not. I think we need more. But at the same time, we haven't seen the results of that as yet. We're starting to see. I'm still doing a few groundbreakings on some of the housing projects that will benefit from the housing bond. I've done a few ribbon cuttings for projects that have been completed, but we have a ways to go to see the end of that. I still believe there's a lot of existing existing housing stock in many communities that need some help in terms of revitalizing, renovating. My hometown of Barrie, there's some beautiful homes that are underutilized. A lot of underutilized housing stock in many areas across the state. Maybe not as much in the Chittenden County area. Chittenden County is doing better than the other counties. Could be doing better than they are today. But the other 13 counties are struggling. And housing plays an important role in trying to attract more people to the state. Again, when I engage with those who graduate from our higher institutions and ask them what it would take for them to stay, first of all, they need a good paying job, something that they've worked hard to achieve. We have that now. We have a number of jobs, positions open throughout Vermont, thousands of jobs available, that aren't being filled today. So we have that, but then they need decent affordable housing, and that would be, for our workforce. So we have a ways to go. We have an Act 250 bill, that we want the legislature to take a look at, where we're trying to make some sense out of Act 250 in terms of our downtowns and making sure that, they have some control and that we, meaning, the downtowns, the villages and communities have some control. If they have zoning, they should be able to do what they need to do, to achieve more housing. So, and renovating the existing stock, I think, is important as well. But we're always engaging the legislature, and they're trying to find ways as well to increase the number of homes available.
One other subject, I think you still have a vacancy in the Vermont Supreme Court to fill former Marilyn Skoglund's seat. Are you close to filling that?
Yeah, you know, we've had a number of openings in both the Superior Court and now in the Supreme Court. I just swore in two new judges, one in Lisa Warren in Caledonia County, and then this week I was down in Newfane to swear in Carrie McDonald Katie to her new position. So that was great, but I've been interviewing as well candidates for the Supreme Court. And the good news, again, I like to give the good news as well as the bad news. The good news is we have some great candidates out there, and almost any one of them would be a good Supreme Court justice. But I'm just weighing that out. I should be able to make a decision on that within the next week or so. So you should be hearing something soon.
How important is it, as you look at these applicants for the Supreme Court, that the person have lower court experience? I'm thinking about the one appointment that I think you did make to the court. Is that correct? Karen Carroll?
Yeah, Karen Carroll, yes.
Who was a Superior Court judge. Is that an important consideration?
Well, I think it's a consideration. You have to weigh everything out, right? I have my four C's that I constantly look at when I'm trying to build a team, and you have to have that chemistry, commitment. You have to be capable, and as well, you have to have character and integrity. So there are a number of people, again, applicants that have all those qualities. It goes through a judicial nominating process, so they've already cleared the first level. And then you have to make the difficult decision as to who it's going to be. So I just look for the qualities I think would best represent Vermont, best represent, fit the Supreme Court now, and make us all proud.
A lot of issues for us to follow in the weeks ahead. Governor Phil Scott, many thanks for taking the time to being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me on.